Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Right. Good afternoon, everyone. It's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday, and it's 5 o'clock and it's Wednesday, and you are listening to the Heritage Radio Station. You are listening to Phil Colicchio and the Business of the Business. That is the show on the Heritage Radio Network that explores the business side of the hospitality industry. And sometimes it's restaurants, sometimes it's chefs, sometimes it's hotels, sometimes it's education. But always it's about the business. And today we actually have a very serious show that I think all of you should really buckle in for, because you know, I've got two gentlemen today who've dedicated their lives to an incredibly important movement.
I had an incredibly important movement earlier this morning.
Well, without further ado, I had a wonderful introduction planned, but why should I waste time? Today it is my pleasure to have my friends Brian Petroff and Doug Quint, founders of the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck and Company. Guys, you're icons. I can't believe you're here. What time did did the driver drop you? Did he drop you at the right place?
We left our plane idling on Bushwick Ave.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun today talking with these two, because if first of all, ice cream is fun, big ice cream is fun, big gay ice cream is incredibly fun, and Doug and Brian kind of try to infuse their business with as much fun, frolic and happiness as you can possibly.
Don't you feel like he's putting a lot of pressure on us?
I am. I'm trying. Well, you know, finish your pizza, Doug, and we can get
hear
down
me chewing?
To business. Doug, thousands of people can hear you chew.
Thank God I'm not self-conscious about anything ever.
Actually, you're good. You're good. Yeah.
Very good. Well, look, the idea that I was going to start off with today is that not everyone sees opportunity in the same way. And that opportunity is kind of a vague concept. You know, people see, they see a hot idea, or they see something that they think it could really warm up to. But you guys found opportunity, frankly, in a polar opposite place, in cold things, in frozen things. And it's become such a phenomenon in New York and throughout much of the country that I was hoping that we could take a little walk through history, mm-hmm. talk about how it began, what you saw in it that made it an interesting business venture, you know, and how you've taken it from, you know, a sort of a what am I going to do this summer idea to really a thriving business that's opening up location after location in New York. Doug, you seem primed to discuss this.
I'm primed, baby. My pump is ready. I think that even the way you approached bringing this up, it doesn't work for us, because we didn't set out. You make it sound like we saw an opportunity in ice cream, and dude, we just wanted to do something strange one summer, and I didn't care if I was a rat catcher or a chimney sweep. I just wanted something weird to do, and driving an ice cream truck presented itself. And now we have a couple of stores. It went from this, you know, maybe I'll do it for a few days to, oh, well, Brian's quitting his job. And so getting an ice cream business the business came to us. We didn't go looking for it.
Well, I was a kid and I saw ice cream trucks all over the place when I was, you know, when I was growing up. I mean, you grew up in Maine. Did they have ice cream trucks up there?
No.
No.
No, they had Tasty Freezes, which we had in Florida too.
Yeah.
When I heard learned that ice cream trucks to me growing up was the Schwann's delivery truck, which brought frozen food and ice cream. And that's what I thought an ice cream truck was. It brought, you know, 4 gallon buckets of butter brickle to you. So it wasn't until really the first time I came to New York around 1982 and stayed at my brother's apartment in Washington Heights, where we live now. And I heard outside the window for hours at a time, and that's when I learned of ice cream trucks, and they seemed like such a strange urban thing. You know, they couldn't exist in our town of 3,000 people in Maine.
I think the reason we jumped into it so blindly was
that we
didn't know anything about the business. And had we known about the business, we may have been a little more hesitant. You know, we didn't have food background, restaurant experience. And knowing now what it takes to deal with the crap on a day-to-day basis, it's not something that people...
And especially the food truck business, because, you know, basically every truck in New York City operates illegally, and there's no place to park, and the cops in Midtown will drive you out at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
You know, if we had known all of that bullshit going into that summer, we wouldn't have had a food truck, because I wanted to do something that was hassle-free.
Yeah, we really had the luxury of it didn't have to be our livelihood. You know, Doug was getting his doctorate. I had a nice cushy job, and it was our hobby. It was our free time.
Were you as into it as Doug was? I mean, Brian had a full time gig.
Yeah, he was just as into it. It just he wasn't on the truck except for about 45 minutes to give me a little break at the. He would after his long work day, he would go down and bring me a sandwich and work while I ate it, and then he'd head home to start prepping stuff for the next day.
Where was your first route, and how did you decide it's, I'm going to do this? I'm going to do this in this neighborhood.
We first debuted in Prospect Park. During Brooklyn Pride of July 2009. But our spot, so to speak, we didn't have a route. Our spot was in Union
Square. In Manhattan, ice cream trucks don't really drive routes. That's more of a suburban thing, or at least, you know, outer boroughs.
Outer borough.
And in Manhattan, there are, you know, about 6 companies that own ice cream trucks, and they have, over the years, sort of duked it out for who's going to park where. So you don't have a route, you have a spot, and you go to your spot, and if there's somebody from one of the rival companies, you know, ice cream truck companies in your spot, you call a guy with a baseball bat, basically, to come over and beat them away from your spot.
Ice cream is so violent. Who knew?
No, no kidding.
Every industry in New York has some sort of racket going on.
We've done a couple of shows on the food truck you know, the growth of it as a real industry. It's not a phenomenon anymore. It's you know, there are a couple of companies that are going public with food trucks as we speak. Hey, by the way, today's a big day for you. It just occurred to me. Today is the public offering of Twitter.
Oh, right. I saw the valuation on that going way, way up.
Yeah. Well, you helped.
Yes, Twitter is basically because of me... and Britney Spears.
There you have it.
I think that's safe to say.
Well, I want to save
Katy Perry.
I want to save Twitter for the show that we're going to air next week, because it's actually pretty interesting to me from a business standpoint, is how you stumbled upon that, but you really thought through exactly how you wanted to use that social media outlet.
Well, we didn't really think through it at first, but it just took a lot of sort of active observations about what worked and what didn't work and how we wanted to present the company. You know, one of the things with Brian and I is that I talk all the time and never stop, as you can hear. And especially that first summer of the ice cream truck, I just blabbed left and right.
Well, I don't like to be the face of the company. I'm more of a behind the scenes person. And Doug is very gregarious. He's outgoing. He can be the face all he wants, and that's fine with me.
Well, but right at the beginning, You know, there wasn't a whole big behind the scenes component. Is that you came to spell?
There was me in front of the scenes and Brian behind the scenes, and that was the whole deal.
Were you Big Gay Ice Cream immediately? Was that your immediate moniker?
Yes.
And we started you put it on a truck?
Yes, we started the process in.
We basically wanted to get shot at.
Yeah. January, February of 2009, we actually started the process of rolling out the truck, and it took until July for it to happen. So, and that involved getting mobile food handlers permits, getting sales tax certification, all these things that we did not even know we needed to do. Mm-hmm. Just the weird rigmarole and red tape of New York City.
You guys started a business.
Yeah,
I mean, you didn't intend to start a business, but you started a business.
And then, and from there, it moved into, well, we knew we were going to have this truck.
Right.
We knew we were going to park it in Union Square. So what did we want to do with it? And my immediate thought was to modernize the menu. Like, the feeling that Mr. Softy is very dated, classic, some would say. But, you know, it doesn't change. And
nothing
it really
new.
Caters towards kind of the base. It's sprinkles, dips.
Right.
And
it's cheap and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we
just
want,
like me.
What we wanted to do was just get inspired by our lives and where we've been and what we've eaten and.
But you had
what
no.
We enjoy,
you had no. So. You had no culinary training, right? You had
no. No, but I mean, we ate and we went out and we knew what we liked.
You knew flavors.
Yes.
Right. You knew
flavors.
Okay.
So, you know, we both started brainstorming and going through great desserts that we had or places that we had traveled to internationally, or looking at putting ethnic flavors, Mexican spices or wasabi or whatever it may be onto the ice cream to really separate it from that Mr. Softy experience. Right. And, you know, where we could focus was on the toppings. So that was what we focused on.
I actually had that nice curry coconut this weekend and really enjoyed it.
That was one of the, I think, probably one of the first two or three combinations that we actually came up with right off the bat.
Yeah.
Olive oil and sea salt, curried coconut, and saba. I think berries and saba were the first three toppings that
people
we did.
People kept requesting that we put Bacos on ice cream.
For salty purpose?
Yeah.
Or because it's bacon is sort of the national food?
No, I mean, that's part of the reason we ended up doing our thing, the choinkwich, the bacon ice cream sandwich. But God, people, Bacos, and oh, crush up potato chips. Nah, we're going to try a little harder.
Yeah. Smart.
But what we were focusing on, and it was really weird because it overnight pretty much took over our lives. And we could not leave our apartment without thinking and seeing something and thinking, how would this taste on ice cream? Or what flavor of ice cream should this be on? And what could we combine this with? And even just the daily act of going and getting our dinner became a exploratory.
Well, Brian, that's really sort of a classic entrepreneur story, is when an entrepreneur falls in love with their idea, they're consumed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, you know, much of it becomes a labor of, truly a labor of love, but love, as we all know, has plenty of arrows involved in it, right? So I never asked you this question before. We've known each other for a little bit. What was the second choice for the name?
There was no second choice.
You see, the name, once we had decided that this was going to happen, I kind of wanted to fess up to my music colleagues, because the freelance musicians in New York City tend to disown you if you take a part-time job.
Bring that back, though. You didn't tell people yet.
Okay.
What your background was.
Well, I played the bassoon professionally as a freelancer, both here and in Boston, and subbed with whatever orchestra wanted to hire me, or chamber music group, and that could be anything from playing a wedding gig in Paramus to playing with the Boston Pops, you know, sort of. If you're free and the money is okay, you do the gig.
Have bassoon, will travel. Right.
Now, the thing is, all your work more or less comes from colleague referrals, and in Boston, it's very different. The people up there, some of the freelance musicians have part-time jobs, and it's not frowned upon. In New York City, I found that if you committed yourself to anything besides starving for your art, no one wanted to give you work.
No kidding.
Yeah, the general ethic was sort of, you don't need to call them. They have they're already doing their backup job working at a music store, things like that. So to have done this ice cream truck, I really needed to sort of announce it as a one-time summer thing that I'm going to try.
Got it.
Because I don't want you all to stop hiring me. Ugh.
Because so the first summer he still was performing. Yeah. And
so
that's you really had to make a choice.
Well, I mean, I had to present the thing to my fellow freelancers as a weird project.
Yeah.
And in doing so, I started a Facebook group so everyone could follow along with the thing. And, right. You know, we really presented it like, here's our weird summer project. And we didn't have a name for the truck. We knew we wanted to cover, you know, we didn't want to be a Mr. Hoo-Hoo. And so the whole idea sounded kind of queer. So I started a Facebook group and we just called it the Big Gay Ice Cream Truck, more or less as a placeholder. But people started joining this group because it just sounded so idiotic, really.
And Facebook doesn't let you change names, so we couldn't change it if we wanted to.
So that's how Big Gay Ice Cream Truck was born. People, our friend Jason made us our logo, and it all just looked so silly that people got behind it. I had T-shirts made with our logo on it.
Before we were even out.
Before we went anywhere. And I sent it to some friends. And I said, please take pictures of yourselves in these so that we can put them on the blog. And I remember one of them was my friend Eddie eating sushi in Okinawa wearing a shirt. And just because I posted this shirt, this photo that said Eddie in Okinawa, and there he is, people assumed we had a franchise in Okinawa. When in fact, we didn't even have our permits to be on the truck yet. So there was this perception that we already were an established brand before we had ever made an ice cream cone.
Doug.
I was very fortunate.
Doug Quint, marketing genius. Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a little bit of a break.
No,
and have
Phil,
our,
no, I'm just getting going.
I know you are, but we've got the wonderful people at Cane Vineyards sponsored this. We need to get their promotion out. You've been listening to Brian Petroff and Doug Quint of Big Gay Ice Cream, two wonderful guys, very interesting business story. We'll be back on the business of the business in just a minute.
Holla.
Holla is right.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
You are listening to Snowmine. Let me in here on heritageradionetwork.org.
Right. We are back with the business of the business.
Do I have to put my pants back on?
You don't. You don't. Continue on wearing those beautiful orange sneakers. And
I think this T-shirt that I wore today is really perfect for radio.
You go ahead and describe
it. It's JFK in a moon landing astronaut suit riding on a giant robot unicorn. On the moon.
On the moon.
And it's all airbrushed.
That's beautiful. When did that come to? to market.
I went.
This is an example.
That's a bad dream, man.
This is how
Doug spends his free time.
Well, Brian likes to obsessively look for deals online on, like, you know, really nice shoes on eBay and stuff like that. I never shop for anything. And then a couple of weeks ago, I said, I'm going to look for cat shirts online. And I found a bunch of airbrushed cat shirts and bought a bunch of them.
Nice.
That's what I do with my money.
Well, and then you found somebody who can do JFK in a moon suit. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yep.
So we're talking about the business. Mm-hmm. You got into it. It was fun. Then you realized there were all these pain in the tail components to it,
It was fun, but it was extremely hard and tiring.
But
it was enjoyable, and we loved doing it, and we didn't mind the hard work, unlike, you know, the grind of going to an office job every day. You know, we barely saw each other for the first few summers, and you know, Doug would leave early. He had to take three subways to get it to the depot where the truck was.
The A to the L to the G.
Nice.
That was a long summer, and I had to carry duffel bags with all of our stuff because every day I was the low man on the totem pole, so I would be on whatever broke down ice cream trucks had a driver no show because he overdosed or something. Yeah. So every
day we'd have temporary signage.
Every day I took every topping home. Every day I brought every topping, every sign back.
Menus.
So when did the idea?
Sometime as well.
I would hope. When did the idea of saying, "All right, we want bricks and mortar should be the next thing. We need a shop."
Summer one was just having fun and having no idea what we were doing.
Did you make money? A business question.
I mean,
did you make any dough?
Yeah, we. We didn't lose
did
anything.
Did you figure out profit margins?
No, we still don't do that.
No.
No. Oh, we suck.
We've never written a business plan. We didn't even know how much our.
You want to try? You want to try one a little later?
If we're really sharing, we never knew how much it cost to make one of our cones until recently. So.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to ask you. How far off were you?
Actually, it was we were better.
It was very enlightening.
When you mentioned the cones, after that second summer, we ended up on Best Thing I Ever Ate, which has been canceled.
How could that be? I mean, how could that be? I thought steakhouses, all food shows lasted forever.
Best Thing I Ever Ate was one of the... Whatever. I'm not going to go into it.
We have a habit of being on things, though, and they get canceled right afterwards.
Like, well, the business of the business will be going on for quite some time.
Gourmet Magazine is another example of that.
Yeah, we were in the Gourmet Magazine came out and said I was the nicest street vendor in history.
Yes. Wow.
And two days later, Gourmet folded. Total fuckery. So anyhow,
are there any other businesses you'd like to bring down before we take any other direction here?
Well
yes, there are.
Well, so summer one was just having fun, and then we didn't even know if we were going to do it again the next summer, and it was fun. We didn't even know if we would keep our Twitter account active over the winter too, but people actually kind of asked us to because they enjoyed the banter and the humor of it. So we kept it going, and we kind of realized we were onto something when over the winter, without even having a business, thousands of people were joining Twitter, following us on Twitter. So we knew we had to bring it back the next summer.
How many after the first two summers, how many Twitter followers did you have?
By the end of the second summer, probably around 5,000 or so.
I mean, that's it. That's a significant number in the merchandising people's universe.
It was
considering it was that first year that
and you rented a damn ice cream.
It was very much on par with the other food trucks. You know, mm-hmm. we were fine with that.
Yeah, and then the second summer was honing our business acumen, if you will.
Yeah, like learning to order groceries ahead of time, in bulk maybe.
In bulk and. Finding out things like restaurant depots.
Did you go to anybody for help? I mean, are there any restaurateurs who you knew that said, hey, I just need a little help and nothing?
No. I mean, everybody we now know, we
they
met.
Just pointed and laughed.
Well, you do have a relatively high profile cast of culinary friends.
I think we're pretty good about telling people when we don't know a thing about a thing and they need to tell us about that thing.
Right. Fair enough. I've seen that firsthand.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were working on a sauce and it was coming out a little grainy, and Johnny Iozzini said, "Oh, you should add some invert sugar to it." And I was like, "Johnny, no fucking idea what you're talking about." And now I know, but you know, I just figured it's better I tell this guy who knows everything about this business what I don't know and let him teach me than let him find out I'm uninformed and think I'm a rube.
Well, there is a wonderful theory about you know, the guy who doesn't know what he doesn't know is doomed. And the idea that, say, I know what I don't know, so I'm going to ask people who know, usually you're going to find a path. That, Brian, again, I'm back to the idea of, you know, you have to decide. Now I want a store.
Well, we went through the second summer with just the truck, and then the third summer we started up again with the truck. And at a certain point, the line at the truck was now an hour long, and nobody was local. And we would actually go down the line and kind of pull and, you know, where are you from? And it was New Zealand. Yeah. It was Toronto. It was Philippines. And there was nobody saying, oh, I'm from Bushwick.
By the third summer, no local person could wait in that line, which I totally understood. It was mostly due to two TV appearances, Rachel Ray and then Best Thing I Ever Ate.
And
Rachel Ray is still on the air.
Yes.
All right.
I hope she's on. Rachel Ray, if people say nasty shit about her, I am right there to claw their eyes out.
Good.
Because she has been amazing to us.
We were turned down to our faces by a number of TV shows who point blank said, we can't put you on the air.
Because of the name.
This was wrapped around the Vendee Awards, annual food truck awards here in the city.
Was it Good Morning America?
It was either CBS or ABC.
And they actually had a producer lined up to come and shoot me, and we did a pre-interview and all of that stuff, and then they no-showed. They just didn't even show up. And later we got it back that they were told Middle America wasn't going to see Big Andy. So when Rachel Ray's people called me in to pitch a segment idea, I said to them, I have segment ideas, but can you just tell me that you're not wasting my time, because we've actually been up for some national morning shows and been basically thrown out at the last minute because of the name. And her head producer said, you don't get it. We can put whatever we want on. We're a syndicated show and we're going to put you on.
Right.
And that was that.
You know, it's curious. I didn't know, before I knew you and I knew about Big Gay Ice Cream, I really wasn't sure whether it was, you know, a couple of guys who wanted to be in your face, you know, or whether it was really as fun as it seemed. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I met you and I realized, oh my gosh, it's real. This is just about fun. This is about not taking yourself seriously. It's about not taking your business idea all that seriously. It's ice cream. Well, but you want to do it great.
Right.
You know, and that's always been a driver. It's not just, you know, you're not putting out bad product. You're putting out product that you eat and you like.
Yeah, right? I mean, we really strive that every year we are improving ourselves in some shape or form. And whether it be our own knowledge about running a business or the quality of our product, or the quality of our staff.
Our kissing skills.
You know, no, whatever it may be.
Important.
And, you know, last year we spent a lot of time redoing our whole ice cream formula when we teamed up with Ronnie Brook. And
but still people occasionally will write reviews saying it's just Mr. Softy. You know, so what are you going to do? Another great review I just read, a customer review, said, good ice cream is never going to come from a machine. Because we have saucer machines, but all ice cream comes from a goddamn machine. You think it comes from a frozen cow? Oh my God. Now, you mentioned, though, the idea of us being in your face. Calm it down, Phil. Bring it back. You ready?
I'm ready.
The in your face aspect, which we've never really, we're not that way.
No.
But the first summer, one of the first press request we got. I don't remember what the website was. It was a big site.
I know what you're talking about. It was a eponymous New York magazine here in New York.
Oh, right. It was a magazine here in New York.
$5 word.
So they wanted to come and do a video segment on the truck. And, you know, we had a beat up former franchise Mr. Softee truck, and we stuck a sign on it, and I put it on with that blue tape that you you put on your walls when you're painting.
Right.
And so the guy showed up, and he said, but what about the truck? And we said, what are you talking about? And he said, I mean, you should do like some pink shag on the outside and lights and a big Priscilla Queen of the Desert shoe on the top.
Yeah.
And you should blast the village people. And Brian and I both like had vomit welling up in our throats.
Like, seriously, village people.
You missed it.
Well,
I'm like, some gays listen to Motley Crue and the Ramones.
You know what? It's a statement. You made a statement, and it's a statement that either is going to either catch somebody's eye and say, oh my, or it's going to catch somebody's eye and say, that's really funny. Yeah. You know, well, that's somebody who's going to say, you know, I can poke a little fun at myself. Yeah. You know, we could have called it the, you know, hey, the big guinea sausage truck, you know?
If it starts to make sense, then suddenly we veer away.
Yeah.
Because we realize that we're not being irreverent enough. And it's not Although a conscious decision, but I think it's just in our nature to always be a little quirky and weird. And we like throwing things in to just kind of freak people out a little
bit. But we really don't do it just irreverence for irreverence's sake or anything like that. It's just whatever perversion comes out naturally.
But I think it's how most people just are, and they like a lot of different things, and when you mash them all together, it's kind of weird. And it's just like we're basically putting out there for everybody to see our inner 13-year-old girl's walls.
There you have it, right? And it's just sort of like, oh, what the heck? You know, it's like, this is what it is. You know, here we are. This is what it is. And we're gonna serve you great ice cream.
And if you like it,
yeah,
you're into it.
Well, if you haven't tried it, try it. If you haven't gone to the two stores that are currently open in New York,
go to both of them. Go back and forth between them.
Give the addresses.
61 Grove Street at the corner of 7th Avenue South and Grove,
right
in the West Village. That's right on the same block as the one train stops.
Yeah, at Christopher Street. Yeah.
And
125 East 7th Street, 7th. Between 1st Avenue and Avenue A, right near Tompkins Square.
And still one of the best blocks in New York City to just go wander and eat because of Luke's Lobster and Porchetta
and Caracas. And Pilos. Yeah.
Great block.
And that was really why we really lucked out when we got that space.
I love being in the East Village.
And that block and that space becoming available was the turning point. Like, okay, we have to open this shop now. Sorry, getting back to what you were asking, it became such a hard thing to do to get locals to eat. We stumbled upon a friend of a friend's shop who was closing, and it was a smoothie shop, so it was already sort of
outfitted into
what we needed it to be. Plumbing and everything was already there, and we said, this is it. This is the block we want to be on. This is our opportunity, and we can't let it go by.
Well, that's a good time to break, and we're going to wrap up today's segment there because you brought us up to your first bricks and mortar store with a lot of good
just
anecdotes.
Brick. Well, only one brick.
a little bit of mortar. I want to thank you guys for coming out today. Listeners, please tune in next week for the second half of this show, The Business of the Business, with Brian Petroff and Doug Quint. We're going to take the next half hour and move it into that second store and where you're heading now, and both in the business and with your media careers. They're both taking off. But for now, we're going to say good evening. It's daylight savings time, so it's really dark outside. Be careful. Thanks for listening to The Business of the Business. We'll see you next Wednesday, 5 o'clock, on the Heritage Radio Network.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.